Welcome, everybody.
If you have ever watched a ball in flight, you've noticed that it rises to a certain level, and then it comes down. And if you measured the going and the coming up to that level, you'd see that it's pretty equidistant at all points. We find that our human lives move pretty much like a ball in flight. We go up to a certain point. But that's as far as we go. And then we come down. The ball can just go to a certain distance. It can't continue upward indefinitely. The human being cannot either. And as we rise like a ball, we may be showing a great deal of success in our particular profession. We may find a great deal of success in our social activities, a great deal of success in our intellectual capacities. And then there comes a time when part of the human mechanism begins to describe its downward motion. The intellect may continue to go up, but sometimes it's the physical part of it that goes down first. Sometimes the emotional breakdown. Other times, other factors in our lives begin to make their descent. And at times, many factors at one time go down together. No matter how high we rise, the nature of humanhood is that we must come down. When you have found your way into a message like the Infinite Way and have discovered some of the secret keys of it, you're no longer concerned about the rising and the falling, because you have found that you're no longer seeking to rise humanly. It takes quite a while to come into that realization that the desire to rise humanly is a deterrent to spiritual awareness. The desire to be humanly successful, the desire to possess, the desire to attain a status, even the desire to be a great writer or a great composer or a great painter. Every human desire, we discover, is a detriment, because it is a departure from the will of the Father. And even though we might rationalize it and say, but surely he wants me to be another Gauguin, or another Thomas Mann, or another Einstein, you'd be surprised to find that he doesn't want you to be anything of the sort. Always, there must first come the inner ordainment. And you cannot manufacture that. You can merely follow the signs. Now then, human life, we know, has its own restrictions built in. The major one being it terminates. And so we finally see that there has been, embedded in the Bible, and in all the spiritual messages of the world, a call to another system, another kind of life. And so we have two systems in the Bible. The system we know called mortal life, and the system we're learning about called immortal life. And even though we have sought our dominion, which we felt was given to us, over land, sea, and air, living the human life, we discover there is no such thing as true dominion. It isn't contained in the human life. And then the paradox of learning that dominion is in giving up your human sense of life and accepting your immortal life. All dominion is in the life of the Father in you. I am the power. I am the way. I am the life. Not you. The human sense of you becomes a cloak that you drop. And as long as you're still seeking humanly for safety, protection, fulfillment, satisfaction, you might as well face it. You're trying to live a human life, and you have no interest whatsoever in the infinite way. You must clarify within yourself your own motives and your own understanding of those motives if you want human betterment. If that is your basic goal, do not pretend to yourself that you are moving on a spiritual path. Because the purpose of the spiritual path is definitely impaired and made impossible for attainment when you still have a human sense of life. And so the pride of the flesh is not part of the spiritual way. The fears of the flesh, the hopes of the flesh, the ambitions of the flesh are all traps, detours along the way, which become meaningless when you attain them. All you've done is attain a better humanhood, which ultimately terminates anyway. Now, we've learned so far in this series that all form on this earth is not God created. And to clarify that, we have said that all form on this earth is before us as an illusion made of invisible light. Light that you cannot define with the naked eye or with any technological instruments. And these form the animated, moving illusions of the world around us and include everything that is in material form. We see that mortal life does not have its origin in God and is not under the jurisdiction or government of God. It can suffer from any degree of lack or limitation because it is not of the Father. It is not the substance of the Father. It is not under the law of the Father. It is separate and apart from the Father. And so, in the second lesson, we learn that God is pure. And being pure, and being the only creator, only purity can emanate from that which is God. So the expression of God everywhere is purity. A pure father means a pure son. You cannot be impure. It is impossible. There's nothing you can do to make yourself impure. You must be pure because the Father expresses as the Son. And so this becomes our conscious awareness. My purity is assured because my Father is pure. And the Father, being perfect, maintains that purity forever. And now we have purity established as our own being, with no second possible. Therefore, we know that our life is pure, and we also know that our form is not pure. We know that our form is not that life. And we have made a distinction then that we are the life of God, which is immortal. But we appear in the form of man, which is mortal and impure. The appearance in mortal form is not the life of God. And the life of God is not in the mortal form. When you're told that God is not in the whirlwind, You're being told that God is life, and life is not in the whirlwind. And that could have been said about anything in which God is not in. Life is not in evil. Life is not in error. Life is not in death. Life is not in a germ. Life is not in anything which is not God's creation. And therefore, the lacks, the limitations, the various causes of fear in our world are occasioned by our lack of knowledge that life is not in them, for they are not of God. And as you tighten the screws on your consciousness, you realize that life, being my name, that life is deathless, diseaseless, eternal. That life is without flaw, without any form of impurity. That life is totally without lack or limitation. And it doesn't matter if the hair is getting bald on the top or it's falling out. It doesn't matter if the wrinkles are appearing in the face. It doesn't matter how we walk or how we talk. All that counts is the knowledge that I am the life of God. This becomes the foundation of your consciousness in the infinite way. You are the life of God. God is your life. Now that's our starting point. But this ball in flight goes up and comes down. Spirit doesn't. In spirit you find a continuous progression, an eternal newness. There's no up and then down. There's no descent. In my Father's house are many mansions. And we find there is a continuous upward movement as we leave our human sense behind us. You may not have heard it, but to you the call to oneness has been strong and direct. The oneness which was announced by the Master to explain the various miracles that appeared. I and the Father are one. That oneness has been scattered throughout the Bible. Those of us who have missed that call are now reminded that in duality, the belief that I am human, we have turned our backs upon the call to oneness, upon the very thing we seek for only in oneness, only in the acceptance of life immortal as now, do we find that dominion which in one way or another lured us into the spiritual path. You want a dominion. You want a dominion because you wanted control instead of being controlled. In some way you wanted to be master of your destiny. And then you discover that the only way you can have that dominion, and this is a truth that will never walk away from you, the only way you can have that dominion is to lose your human sense of life. All other dominion is pretense and temporary. Only in the acceptance, the living, the knowing of your immortal life is there dominion. The prophets knew this, and they dropped their words in such a way that the masses could not understand. Always the sacred was hidden from the profane. Take a look now at some of the interesting passages in the Bible which bring us into the knowledge of one. We're going to look at Ecclesiastes. This is 4:8. King Solomon. There is one alone, and there is not a second. Yea, he hath neither child nor brother. Yet is there no end of all his labor, neither is his eye satisfied with riches. Neither saith he, for whom do I labor and bereave my soul of good? Now that one alone is reiterated by Isaiah. We may not have recognized it. The voice of him that crieth in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, and that means of the one. Make straight in the desert a highway for our God. The desert is the human consciousness. The highway is the knowledge of one. And then you find in Matthew the repetition of this. When John the Baptist appears, and note the word tucked into this statement, saying, repent ye, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. For this is he that was spoken of by the prophet Isaiah, saying, the voice of one crying in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, make his path straight. The voice of one. You've noticed that the Ark of Noah was built, and on it he was told to take two of this and two of that. Now you can see the symbolism very clearly there. He was taking two into the one. Every living thing, two of every living thing, both male and female. Out of one had come two, and Adam symbolically gave his rib to become Eve. And these two are returning into the ark to become one. Always the one is the key. A male and female of everything that is on the earth. And the ark is the one, the knowledge of oneness, which sails over the flood of the world mind, where two or more are gathered in my name. My name is one. One life, one being. Are you that one? If there are divergent points of view in your consciousness, they must be gathered together into the ark of one. Until where you stand is only the one. Now, there are other ways in which this one is shown. One of the most popular passages overlooked is the Acts. When the day of Pentecost was fully come, they were all with one accord in one place. Do you see why they were about to receive the Holy Ghost? They were in one accord in one place. They were in the knowledge of one God, one being, one life, one law, one power, one substance, without opposite. They had taken all of their twos into the ark of one. They had spent 3 years with the Master, and they had been cleansed of dualities. They didn't know love and hate. They didn't know wisdom and stupidity. They didn't know safety and accidents. They didn't know protection and vulnerability. They didn't know good health and germs. The twos had been combined, had been blended into one. And that one was the purity of God, is all that is present. You see, they had stepped out of the human sense of life, out of the belief that there is immortality and mortality. The two had become one in that mortal life. Mortality had been swallowed up. They were about to receive the Holy Ghost because they were now aware that the only life there is the life of God. And so Peter, John, James, all the rest had accepted, now are we the sons of God, now are we immortal life. Though we appear on earth in the flesh, now are we immortal life. And then came the flood of spirit. And the blending of two into one is given to us with just one word. Suddenly there came a sound from heaven, as of a rushing mighty wind, and it filled all the house where they were sitting. And there appeared unto them cloven tongues. Those cloven tongues, that's the sign of two blended into one, like a forked tongue, a split. Head and heart had been united. That's the cloven tongues. The intellect had been united with spiritual consciousness, and all that remained was the one, the immortal sense of life. When that happens in you, when you have been able to discard, cleanse out, redeem all thought of human life, and all factors of human life, and all human possibilities, so that come what may, no matter how high the flood rises, you are in the ark of the realization of one immortal life as your life. When that happens to you, this is what happens to you. They were all filled with the Holy Ghost. Began to speak with other tongues as the Spirit of God gave them utterance. Now that's the point of oneness. There were many other ways in which oneness was disguised in the Bible. There's no point giving it to those who have no idea of what it is. You'll find a very interesting thing about the number 10. If whenever you come across the number 10, you stop a moment, you'll see that you're being told about oneness. In that, the one is your source. The one is your identity. And the zero is the nothingness of human life. And the only way you overcome the nothingness of mortal life is to be in the one. The one overcomes the zero. And there are interesting ways in which that 10 was dropped into the Bible. One of them is in 1 Kings, the 11th chapter and 3rd verse. It says it in such a way that it clues you in on many other things that you'll come across in the Bible from time to time. The number 10 is what they're trying to give us, and they do it this way. Speaking of Solomon, they say, he had 700 wives and 300 concubines. Let's see if I can find that. 11:3. He had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. Now, the 700 wives and the 300 concubines, you see, add up to 10,000. Doesn't matter about the zeros at all. They're telling you 10. They're telling you that the secret of King Solomon's wisdom, omniscience, power was that he had reached the point where the one self had been accepted and there was nothing else there. King Solomon had attained that level of consciousness which is the one immortal self realized. So they take this roundabout way to say it. Now you've heard again and again that 10 righteous men can save a city. And yet, where are the 10 righteous men? You don't see 10 righteous men saving any cities, because the 10 again is telling you the secret of oneness. Whoever comes into the one is one with source, and all the rest is zero. Why were there 10 commandments? Because it was a symbol of the total balance that you attain when you have accepted the one immortal life. One, one, one. And there are other ways in which this is carried out. Two always suggested the feminine, so that one would be Adam and two would be Eve. One would divide and then become the second, or the feminine. And then the second would have to come back into the first, so that the male and female would have to be united into one again. Just as the two, male and female, of each living thing had to be brought into the ark. In other words, the male and female elements of your humanhood, the positive and the negative, the opposites, had to come into the mystical marriage. That union in which all that remains where you are is the consciousness of God. Now, we want to take some exercises today which are quite different than a remembrance of quotations. And these are exercises given to us spiritually so that you won't find them in any book. When you have accepted the truth that your life is immortal, you still linger in the belief of the forms of the world. And even though you may have reached that level of understanding which can say the life of God is in no form, but the life of God is there, you will still be influenced by those forms. So that every way you look, you're making judgments about forms. Now, try this first. See if you can, for the next minute or two, close your eyes. And even though thought may enter, see if you can keep your consciousness free of form. So that no matter what enters your consciousness, if it's a form, see if you can get rid of it. If it's a girl, a boy, a flower, a tree, a house, see if you can keep your consciousness pure of form. This is an exercise which develops your capacity to drop the form consciousness. You'll find later when you open your eyes and see form, if you perform this exercise faithfully, even though you see form with your visible eyes later, it will not make the same impression upon you as normally. If you have spent some time relaxing in the, just keeping form out of your consciousness. Every time a person comes in there, just reject that form quickly. You'll find that if you develop this capacity, you'll practice it quite often. Sometimes you can spend as much as 10 minutes to a half hour just relaxing in this little challenge, with nothing else in mind other than to reject form from your consciousness as an exercise. Nothing stupendous would happen necessarily while you do this, other than you feel at peace, and you will have been cleansing your temple of the false consciousness of form. Because where the form appears to be, only the immortal life is. I give you this exercise because of what I have seen it do. And I recommend that you practice with it from 10 to 30 minutes from time to time. Try it, say, for a week. Just to get the consciousness or the capacity to have dominion over your consciousness in that you can keep form out of there. That's all this exercise is for. Now, as I say tree, see if you can keep that picture of tree out of your consciousness. As I say rose, see if you can throw out the rose from your consciousness. As I say automobile, mother, sister, brother, the world will throw these things at you, and you must learn to move them out of your consciousness. Then, beside visuals, there are sensations of touch, hearing, taste, and smell. And if you are able to go further, you can actually take words that are coming to you from somebody and keep them out of your consciousness, if you wish. Everything of this world, you see, can be kept out of your consciousness. Everything. That would be a pure consciousness. And you start with form. You can expand it to other things if you wish, but whatever is in the world, you should have the capacity to keep it out of your consciousness, even though the world will try to push it in. Now that's building a dominion in your consciousness. Then we would go on to a more advanced exercise. And this is quite stupendous. You probably won't succeed in the second until you have had some time practicing the first. And the second is that there really is nothing outside of your consciousness anyway. You can't know anything outside of your consciousness. All you can know and experience is that which is in your consciousness. And therefore, in this second exercise, take the word automobile, and instead of keeping it out of your consciousness, keep it in your consciousness, but no, it isn't out there. It's in your consciousness. You'll find each exercise helps the other one. Take the word mother, and you'll find that mother is in your consciousness and never got out of your consciousness. Take the word business. You'll find your business is in your consciousness. You may think it's on a certain street in a certain city. You're wrong. It's in your consciousness. Your consciousness is much bigger than that street and that city. The size of your consciousness is the size of the world. And the world is in your consciousness. That's what made your world. Your consciousness made visible is your world. And everything in your world is your own consciousness. If there are germs in your world, it's because they're in your consciousness. If there's bad business in your world, that's in your consciousness. If there's safety and protection in your world, that's in your consciousness. Now, to take this exercise and to understand that your dominion over your world lies in the knowledge that there's nothing outside of your consciousness. The Pacific Ocean for you may have been out there, but after you have practiced this exercise, you'll know that the Pacific Ocean is in your consciousness. Every mountain, every valley, every stream, every planet, every star, even the sun in the sky, everything is in your consciousness. That is your complete world. And strangely, the sun, the stars, the streams, the valleys and the mountains that are in your consciousness are not the same ones that are in your neighbor's consciousness. They have a completely new Pacific Ocean in their consciousness, a completely new sun and stars and planets. Their consciousness contains their world. And they may think that their world and yours are the same, but if you have practiced your exercise well, you will discover that as many people as walk this earth, that's how many Pacific Oceans there are. That's how many suns there are. That's how many different worlds there are. Each consciousness contains another world. Now, you're concerned at the moment with your world, within your consciousness. And if you have dominion over your consciousness, you will have dominion over your world. Nothing can get outside of your consciousness. There's no place for it to go. And so the automobile coming down the street isn't. It's in your consciousness. The child born isn't. It's in your consciousness. The qualities of your life in this world, in your consciousness, are determining the outward appearances. Everyone you know who seems external to you is in your consciousness. And when you talk to them, you are speaking to someone in your consciousness. This is an exercise that must be practiced to be experienced. And then another exercise, which may make the first two clearer to you, is to see this. That your consciousness is cosmic in size. It isn't a consciousness just as big as your body. It's cosmic in size. And way down in the middle of it is a little image called your form. A little 5-foot image in the center of a vast, vast, vast consciousness. All that that consciousness is in quality becomes the visible image called body. And the rest of the consciousness becomes the world. That's how your little body appears in this consciousness. And that's how your population of your world walks and talks in this consciousness. And when you go up to the source of this consciousness, you find the two life streams that are feeding it. The divine and the world. Both feeding this consciousness that you call me down in this little image called body. And the quality of that consciousness is being determined by what percent of the world mind is feeding you and what percent of the divine. As you learn to turn more to the divine, that changes the little image in the middle of the consciousness, and it changes the world around that image. And vice versa, as you have less of the divine, you find that the little image shows some discord, some lack, some limitation, because always the image that you have called body is made of the fabric of that cosmic consciousness which you are living in. And so now we turn away from the image. We turn away from the world, because the image and the world are all within your consciousness, and we become more concerned about the quality of my consciousness. For this in turn determines the quality of my body image, and it determines the quality of my business, the quality of my life, the quality of my world. Everything in my consciousness becomes the fabric of everything in my world. And so whereas the human goes up and comes down like the flight of a ball, the spiritual student is interested in developing a spiritual consciousness. And so you turn your consciousness to the divine knowingly, which is the arc of oneness. And you do not accept the opposites. You do not accept any quality in your life that is not immortal, because you would be accepting a lie. When you think you are in some form of lack or limitation, you are denying your immortal life, and you're being fooled by an appearance. You're not coming into the ark, you're accepting the opposite of the quality of your immortal life. Your immortal life has no opposite qualities. You cannot come into the ark, into oneness, and have opposite qualities. And so the realization of oneness means that I, being the one immortal life, indivisible from the Father, I and the Father being one immortal life, every quality of the Father is present now, and that is my consciousness. I'm learning to be conscious of that which I cannot see, because the kingdom at hand is what I'm learning to be conscious of. And the more I become conscious of the kingdom at hand, the more this vast consciousness feeds the world which I inhabit as a human appearance. Do you see, all thought is not in your human life, not on the life of the body, not on what you shall eat, nor wherewithal you shall be clothed. All thought is not any more of that life. All thought is of the one immortal life. You take no thought for your mortal life, because you have none. You don't go on pretending that you have a mortal life and someday you'll have an immortal one. You take no thought for your mortal life. You have no human need. You're not trying to improve your business. You're not trying to improve your health. An immortal has no business. An immortal has no health. An immortal has no physical form. You cannot accept immortal life and go on believing in the things of mortality. If you do, you're living in that little image in the middle of your consciousness, instead of in your consciousness. The little image in the middle of your consciousness has a false sense of consciousness. It does not know the one immortal life, and it denies it all day long. Your dominion is to drop all sense of mortal life. And so someone would say, well, do I stop eating? Because it says, take no thought for your life, what ye shall eat. Do I stop going to fashion shows? It says, take no thought of wherewithal thou shalt be dressed. Now you see, that would be trying to make a jump out of mortality into immortality just by a new set of words. But it can't be done that way. It must be lived through. It's a slow, complete dedication, a concentrated effort to move from another level. And that other level is beginning to realize forms are not external to your consciousness. Every form in your world is in that cosmic consciousness that you are. That's where all the forms are. They never can get out of that consciousness. There's no place they can go. And what is their power then? They have no power. There's no one in your whole world who has a power. All power is in the One. Now then, you're giving up mortal sense. You're learning that form is all internal, within consciousness. It's never external. And then you know that there are no powers in forms because they're all within. They're not out there. There's no power to deprive you. There's no power to harm you. If you think there is, you're thinking of your mortal self. And as long as you're dwelling in your mortal self, in your divided consciousness, you're missing the call to oneness. It's a drastic step if you take it before you have understanding. But you must build that understanding because you're going to be called upon to take that step. Spirit is going to insist that you take that step. Because although you think you are a life, it says, no, I am the life. You think there's a mortal way, it says, no, I am the way. You think there's a human solution, it says, no, I am the power. And it reinforces that again and again and again in the call to oneness, not by might, not by power, but by my spirit. By oneness. I am the One, and oneness is the way. I am the One, and oneness is the life. I am the One, and oneness is the truth. Oneness is not mortality. Oneness is immortality. How far do you think you're going to be called upon to give up your mortal sense? You will be called upon totally. That is the purpose of crucifixion. A complete giving up of all human sense, was it not? There was nothing to protect. No need to protect the body. No need to cling to life. No need to protect any possessions. Why? Because there was no mortal life there. It seems like a drastic step. And yet, the unwillingness and inability to take that step is more drastic. Because then you're the human ball in flight going up and coming down with a terminating point. And that termination point has no existence in the immortal life. All of the giving up is the giving up of that which never was. Now these little exercises may be seemingly of no major consequence, but once you've started to accept that all that can ever be in your world is within your consciousness, including your own body image. The reason that automobile is not outside of you is because it's only outside of your body image. But the automobile and your body image are both within your consciousness. And so you're developing the dominion over consciousness, the awareness, the ability to stand in that consciousness, controlling the outer world by knowing it is within you. And then simply dropping mortal sense and resting in the word that the Father has dominion. The Father is the power. And the giving up of mortal sense is signaled when you can come to that place where you want no power over anything. You discover the power of no power. You need power over no business, none whatsoever, to make it improve. You need power over no enemy. You need power over no condition. Why? They are merely the belief in mortal life. Drop the belief in mortal life. Rest in the knowledge of one immortal life, and then trust, dropping all defense, all desire, all need to improve or correct. Trust the one immortal life to infiltrate your consciousness and express itself in your world as its own perfection in all things. This giving up the desire to improve and correct and build and safeguard is all based on mortal life, which is the false sense of life. The Master gave up that false sense of life as a demonstration to us of the way to follow. I'm the last one to tell you to do this because someone says do it, or that it's easy. I know that it's the most difficult thing there is to do. And yet there's a great satisfaction and a great escalation in consciousness once you start trying to do it. Because you discover the mirage of the mortal life. You don't discover that mirage any other way. There never was a mortal life to give up. You're giving up the sense of mortal life. Who created mortal life? God? Could the immortal Father create something other than itself? Do you see that we're coming over the false sense of mortality? But if there is no mortality, what are you? Immortal. If the mortality you have lived in is not real, can those things connected with it be real? What happens to your mortal life once you accept immortal life? You find that the image and likeness of immortal life becomes the image and likeness of your life and of your experience. We go back to Ecclesiastes, there is one alone. He has no son and no brother. There is no human life. And those who walk in the Spirit cannot walk in the flesh. Now, we're not asking the world to do this. We're not even asking you to do this. It is the spirit in you that decides whether you're going to walk in the spirit or the flesh. And there are many who believe that. And that means they're simply not ready. And there are many who are learning that the only way they can walk is in the spirit. And for those we meet. For those who cannot accept it, there'll be another time and another place. For those who can, we clasp our immortal hands in the oneness of the invisible immortal life, and we accept it, rejecting all else, so that mortal life ceases to have any meaning other than an image in consciousness which we endure while we rest in the awareness of immortality now, watching it express until the image which we see is the image of the Father, the divine image and likeness, until the qualities of that image are expressing in its world and the kingdom at hand is realized. We have no intention of going up like a ball and coming down again. Now those exercises then, to review them for you, are: one, just to rest in the luxury of taking dominion over consciousness so that all thought of form as it comes to you is dismissed. This is only during the exercise. That doesn't mean the rest of the day. Not at this point. Just learning you have the capacity to dismiss thought of form from your consciousness. Second exercise, to know that all that is external to you is actually not external at all, but is in your consciousness. And if you will wait for the experience of that, so that you catch the idea that the apple is within you, the tree is within you, and we don't mean within your human form, we mean within your cosmic consciousness. And that your own form is within your cosmic consciousness. You see that we're really turning from the human way. This is the repentance. You're turning away from the normal sense mind. You're inverting. You're coming back to the immortal self, which is infinite as the Father. These exercises are only valuable when you reach an experience within them. And the third exercise is to rest in the consciousness that you are immortal life. You have dominion in the knowledge of your identity. You do not accept the opposite of immortal life. Immortal life is without fear. If you have fear, you're in mortality. Immortal life is without doubt, without uncertainty, without seeking and striving, without struggle, without concepts of bad health or good health, without lack and limitation. You cannot have these feelings in you and still say, I am immortal life, because the very word and fear is a denial of the immortality of your being. The fact is that God is omnipresent, and every denial then is falling way back down into mortality. But we're told one with God is a majority. That's a direct statement to you. Unless you're one with God, dominion is impossible. Now, this is only the first chapter of Joel, but the book is the realization of oneness. And in fairness to you, in fairness to Joel, in fairness to the demand of spirit, it's probably good that right here at the outset, we're coming face to face with the purpose of the whole book. If through this book you can attain the realization that you are immortal life without opposite, then that book in you will be fulfilled. That's what this series is about. I'd like to have a brief meditation, and then we're going to pause for a moment before coming back to very specific quotations selected from this chapter, Pure Beings.